Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio for another Saturday morning show. I'm on weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Was not here yesterday, pardon me, last Saturday, because we were at the College of DuPage. Thomas Jefferson and I were on stage in front of 1,100 WGN radio listeners. We did a couple of shows. We talked about things then and things today. I was just so happy with how it went. And then I was listening back to some of the audio of it this morning. And I'm going to play for you after 10:30 just a couple of outtakes, if you will, some bites from the show. Jefferson was on his game. And some of the questions were just terrific. So if you missed the show, and you probably did, if you heard the show, and I'm glad you did, we'll just give you a couple of highlights after 10:30, TJ and me and you. We'll do another show again in the fall. Details still to come. Lou Manfredini mentioned that he's quoting me to his wife and friends about recycling, because we've talked a little bit the last week or so about things you should and should not recycle. And we did a couple of things this week on the show that you may not have heard because White Sox baseball preempted us a couple of times. We weren't on the radio. When we're not, we're on the stream. We're at WGNradio.com. But I just wanted to mention them in case you didn't catch as much of the show as you might normally. One of the things we talked about was the Dutch Reach. Who knows what the Dutch Reach is? Domati, Joe, do you know what the Dutch Reach is?
No, sounds like a ninja maneuver of some sort.
Sounds like my new nickname.
The Dutch Reach is now part of the rules of the road in the state of Illinois. This is how you are instructed to operate your car. This is new. When you parallel park, you are supposed to now open the door with the hand farthest from the door. Think about that if you're the driver. You would normally use your left hand, which is right there by the door, and you'll open it up and get out. Now, you are supposed to use your opposite hand, the one towards the center console, because when you do that, it'll force your body to turn at a slight angle, and as you do so, you have a better chance of seeing behind you if there's a motorcyclist or a bicyclist coming along, and you won't open your door into them. That's called the Dutch Reach. They have a lot of bicycles in Holland. It was pioneered there, and other states have adopted it. Illinois now has the Dutch Reach.
So the theory is that you have to turn your whole head and neck when you use your right hand to open a door.
And I thought, generally, I don't even want to do that, period. I'm getting old enough now that the whole concept of that strikes me as a little more stress than I want to exert. Having tried it recently, I've discovered that it's not so difficult after all. Dominator, I think you'll like this. Try it, and you will be a safer driver or door opener going forward. It's the rule in Illinois. That's how you're supposed to drive. What else did we talk about this week? You know, on your phone, the Gmail or whatever mail app you have on the face of your iPhone, in my case, it's that red M against a white background. That's my mail icon. You've got this too, right? Then there's a number above it, and it shows you how many unopened, unread email you have. My number is 776. Griff, what's your number? Do you have the same sort of thing?
Yeah, 34.
That is awesome. I envy you for that.
I don't know. That's funny you bring this up. I don't know where those 34 emails are.
Oh, and when you scroll down, you don't see them?
No, well, it's been 34 for like 3 years. So now my brain just translates 34 to zero.
Yeah, I've kind of gone through that with my text message icon. I can't find the one that's missing. But you don't have a bunch of email then, right? You don't. Correct?
Well, I check it every day, delete the ones I don't need.
Okay, I'm at 776.
I have two email accounts. One is, I have no idea. The number must be in the thousands.
Yeah.
But I just engage with that one a little differently. This one, the one that I'm on most, 34.
For some of us, that concept's a little suffocating, though, right? It's nagging. It's something that's always tapping on your shoulder going, you know, you really need to delete, read, or take action with these emails.
Yeah.
So we were kicking it around on the show. and some listeners were texting in as well. Violetta had a couple hundred, and she was on her way down. Elif has, I think, about 4,000 on one of her accounts. Anna DeVlantis came in, and she was in the tens of thousands. Brian, who does the music mixing, he's one of the staff members for the Rokan show, 96,000. But the reason we were talking about this was one of our listeners sent me a screen grab. 108,800 is the number on there. God bless the thing. It's still working. It still counts all those unread email.
It had all six digits across.
Yeah, right. I know. You didn't think it could do that. It can. Something to work on if maybe you're getting close. We told Brian, you know, don't read the next 4,000. It's sort of like the odometer on your car. Isn't it cool when it rolls over? You want to see all five zeros come up after the one on his phone. So I offer that just as sort of, isn't it nice to know you're not the worst? That one of our listeners has 108,000, Brian has 96,000, Anna's on her way. And if you can't do it, don't worry, life will go on, I guess. I wanted to talk a little bit about summer. and not really summer, but maybe I'll get to summer through an article that Mary Schmeek wrote. It's posted in today's Chicago Tribune online, and maybe it's in print. I don't have the print edition in front of me. But we were talking also this week about things that, as a Chicagoan, you do, you have done, you know you need to do or have done, and if you have not, you feel guilty about. I have never been to a Bears game at Soldier Field. I was once, but it was before they fixed it up, and I wouldn't even count it as a Bears game experience these days. I've never been to a Bears game. I've never been to the Planetarium. Now, some of these things are expensive, and you'll never do it for that reason, but some of them are just things that you know, oh, that's a great thing about Chicago or the Chicago area, but I've just never done it, and I know I should.
You've never been to a Bears game?
I have only been to one.
Okay.
Well, I guess I have. What?
Wait, so what?
It was 25 years ago, and it was at the old stadium, and I hated every bit of it.
Remember, never means never.
All right, so I've been there once. It feels fair enough.
You should make it back, yeah.
I take that back, Riff. I have been to a Bears game. I will not advertise that.
I wasn't even trying to put you on the spot. I was just clarifying, and then you doubled back on yourself.
Truth is too malleable these days. I have not been to a Bears game. Final answer.
Is truth?
No,
really
no.
True?
I mean, I have been. I have been. Thank you.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
Okay. I have not been to the Lyric Opera. I don't know that I want to go to the Lyric Opera, but I hear it's a really great thing.
So you were there 10 years ago, or what?
Stop that. I have not been to Orchestra Hall to see the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and I feel guilty for not having done that. I should do that. So we asked our listeners, what are some of the things that you know you should do? The sort of thing that when you say it, people will go, oh, are you kidding me? You've never been to the lake? You know people that live in Florida or California and have never been to the ocean, right? So he said, tell us what those things are. John, I've never been to a Bears game at Soldier Field. I've never been to a Blackhawks game at the United Center. Boy, if you put one venue, one sporting venue on your list, I would say probably Wrigley Field is one. But I would put a Blackhawks game, not a Bulls game. I would put a Blackhawks game at a tight number two. John, I've never been to the art museum as an adult, not part of a school field trip. Yeah, that's a different animal. You have to go leisurely as an adult and not as part of a student-led tour group or a student tour group. John, I've never been, says Phyllis, on the architectural river tour. You got to do the Chicago boat tour. John, I've lived here my whole life. I've not done that. John, I have not gone on that glass sky deck at Willis Tower. Is that of interest to you guys? Domati, Joe, Griff, are you guys interested in climbing out on that tilting glass ledge they have sticking out of the top of Willis Tower now?
I should do that.
Oh, you're game for that,
yeah,
huh? I don't want to do that.
I would do it. I don't find myself going out of my way to go and do it.
Right. I mean, unless you have friends in from out of town, why would you take the time and money to go there?
Right, exactly.
Which is weird, then, because sometimes people from out of town know our great, you know, things better than we do. And that's maybe my point here. Liz said, John, I'm not anxious to see the Air and Water Show in the heat with a million of my closest friends. It's too people-y, said Jim as well. John, you have
too people-y?
Yeah, that people-y was the word. And I've been to it the last couple of years, and I don't think it is at all. Griff, you're not the fan of the Aaron Water show, I am.
No, not at all. It's too people-y. You could say that the city is too people-y.
You got 8 million people-ies here.
You maybe just have a problem with the city.
Oh, really? John, go to a show like Second City. I have not been to Second City, so I cannot get my Chicago ticket punched until I do. This guy from 847 said, John, I work on a scaffold outside of the high-rises in the city. I have no need to go on that ledge, the glass ledge at the side of the Willis Tower. The auto show, the Pedway. Somebody from 630 said, go to any of the parades, Pride, Mag Mile, Holiday Parade, the St. Patrick's Day, River Die, etc. Some of those I think are terrific, and some of those I think are just awful.
I find most of the big stuff you can miss, in my opinion. And that's just me. But like a lot of big Chicago events, I have no interest in anymore. The one that was on that list that made me sad was the Art Institute. You got to go. Yeah, you should go twice a year. It's the best.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I haven't been to the Art Institute in years. Years and years and years. What about you? So that's my question for you. What is that thing that every Chicagoan should have done by now, or that you feel guilty because you've never? And your friends will go, what? 312-981-7200. Call me right now or text. Michael, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. What's up?
Hi, I just wanted to contribute a suggestion that every Chicagoan should try, and that's to ride the bike path, like from Montrose down to McCormick Place. You don't have to do it as an exercise. You can do it slowly, but we do it every Father's Day. Stop at the Chess Pavilion. Great people watching. Stop at the Buckingham Fountain for an ice cream. And it's just one of the treasures that Chicago has to see not only different parts of the city, but great sights and right along the lake. So I really, really enjoyed that about Chicago.
Yeah, I did about half of that last weekend, and I just couldn't agree with you more. There's so many places now to get a snow cone or a beer or a hot dog, and there's people watching, there's places to stop. It's very easy to do.
You can park at Montrose, there's a ton of parking there, and you rent bikes or take your own.
Along the way, yeah, absolutely. Great suggestion. Thanks for listening and calling, Michael.
All right, thanks, bye.
You know, I would also just suggest Millennium Park for the list. I, the other day, just strolled through Millennium Park, took in the bean, the fountain, the obelisks, just the people watching. You talk about a treasure in this city. Boy, Millennium Park is that, too.
But that's one that, like, everybody has done, I think.
Really? You think so?
I think because it's free and it's so central.
Watch this. Hey, Joe. Hey, Domati. Have you guys taken a leisurely stroll through and just taken in Millennium Park?
No, not so much.
Hey, Joe, have you done that?
Can't say I have.
You've not been to Millennium Park?
I've been to Millennium Park.
Well, that's the question.
Okay, all right, here.
We're not a leisurely, thoughtful...
Well, I think that's... if you walk by it, I don't think you've been to Millennium Park.
I think that's what it is. Right?
Just like John, I've never been there except for last year when I went.
Yeah, what's going on here? I have to fact check this whole show now.
Welcome to 2018, Griffin. Thank you, Domati. And by the way, Joe, I'm sorry I stepped away just to chat with one of the engineers here. Bob Ferguson and I were having a conversation when I missed your shout-out to me. What were you saying?
That's totally fine. Give Bob a shout out as well from me. Rich Carlis kicked 7 field goals for the Minnesota Vikings back in 1989.
Oh, yeah.
The Vikings won on an overtime safety, 23-21. So there had never been 8 field goals in a safety, but there have been 7 field goals in a safety.
In that high school game, it was 8 field goals in a safety. The score was 26-0, right?
26-0.
Well, who were the two teams on that one again? Downers?
Wheaton-Warrenville South and Matea Valley. It was Wheaton-Warrenville South with the 8 field goals. Jack Olson, his name is.
I can't believe you were able to dig that up. So then I said, I'll bet that's never happened in the history of football. Joe, work on it. And dang if you didn't work on it. We had a game where there were 7 field goals in a safety, but to your knowledge, never 8 in a safety.
Well, it looks like the NFL record is 8 field goals. Rob Baronis in 2007, and that game ended 38-36.
Yeah, but I want the combo package. I want only field goals and safety. And we had, at least in a high school game, I don't know that there's somebody keeping tab nationally on high school games, but what a strange game that would have been. Boy, let's hear it from the field goal kicker, huh? As a former field goal kicker myself, and I don't want to go into my history as a football player, but I was a kicker for the Manuka Indians, and those athletes are near and dear to my heart.
I'd love to see you in football pads now.
That's what everybody says. They
can't imagine it. It's probably not too different than your Blackhawks video when you were out on the ice.
Yeah. Everybody thinks I don't look like a football player, but back in 1977 for Manuka High School, I was one of the bigger guys on the team.
I'm gathering intel for my nickname right here, right now. This is great. I just wanted to tell you guys that.
That's right. We were all going to come up with nicknames before the hour is over. Well, last weekend, I was at the College of DuPage on stage with Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, author of the Declaration of Independence. What a terrific performance by our TJ as he talked to us about things then and things today. Some great questions from the crowd, too. So at some point, he was saying that it would be wise if we got rid of members of Congress. I mean, everybody's upset with the president. Everybody's upset with the Congress, and the rating for them is all very low. And he said, you guys ought to put new people in. That's sort of where we'll pick up the conversation from the stage at the College of DuPage last Saturday.
Imagine if the day after somebody in the press said, well, all 435 representatives have been retired. This country would be in a revolution, and it would be peaceful, not a single bullet fired. The people would have taken back their country. Every congressman after that would be more attentive to your needs.
Well, I like my congressman, I just don't like yours or his.
I think you need to do it as a matter of democratic principle. Not, you shouldn't let your own loyalty or your own respect for your congressman get in the way. You should just do it as an interesting and whimsical gesture. They laugh, but I'm actually serious. It would be, it's a gesture of reasserting your sovereignty.
Speaking of elections, here in Illinois, we have two billionaires that are running for governor. And I don't know which one of them to vote for. They both seem like billionaires. And I was going to ask you if you could help us figure out which one to vote for. Wouldn't you like to know who? And it seems to me like the only question for him would be, should I vote for the guy with the most bathrooms or the fewest bathrooms? Because they're running TV commercials, and the one guy took all the toilets out of his house. And that lowered his property value, and he had to pay less in taxes. And that guy said that the other guy has way too many houses anyway. He's got way too many bathrooms. Your thoughts?
I suppose I would start by saying, what's a bathroom? We did not have bathrooms in my time. We didn't bathe much in my time. I was a sort of an avant-garde planner at Monticello. There's a privy. An indoor privy, but it is, by your standards, exceedingly barbarous.
Yeah. You didn't have it at Monticello, that beautiful building? You spent all
our kitchens were separate because they often burned and therefore burned down the house. We bathed infrequently, let's say. We really lived in an age of the sponge bath, more or less. Now, I was a little more fastidious than the average Virginian, but it is the case, say, in the 17th century, in the age of Samuel Pepys, the great 17th century British diarist, he and his wife Elizabeth would each take two baths per annum. And they didn't always synchronize, and so not to be too graphic with a mixed audience, but she would deny him sexual access for weeks after her bath because she didn't want to pollute herself with his...
Right.
With his soiled body.
Sure, you think it'd dawn on him that this would be a good time for me to get a bath too, but...
Well, my point is that that if you have reached the point where you can have a significant public dispute over the number of bathrooms in your possession, then you have reached the end times, in my view.
Sorry about that. Help us.
I bet you're glad you asked. Right?
Help us though figure out what attributes. Or talents a governor, a mayor, a chief executive, a president should have?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this, and so I welcome this. And I know I'm going to sound as if I'm making some sort of a point, and I'm not. I'm just telling you how I
how I saw it. Number one, a president. This person should be hesitant and humble. hesitant by, I was, and George Washington was, not certain that you want this role, pretty sure that you're not equal to it. Washington's farewell address from 1796 ends with an apology to the American people. If I've done anything that has been less than what you expected of me, I apologize to you. This is George Washington, the greatest man who ever lived, perhaps.
Reminds me a little of the humility that John McCain showed when Jake Tapper asked him, not that long ago, he thought it might be his last interview, Tapper with McCain, and he said, how should we remember you? And he said, well, somebody who failed a lot but tried his best to serve his country honorably. It's a lovely little exchange. I might get to that before we're done here, but thank you, Thomas Jefferson, for at least a few thoughts. He went on then to describe what a leader should be like. It's interesting because last Saturday, when we were on stage, it would have been the birthday of Meriwether Lewis, of the Lewis and Clark expedition that Jefferson set out. You know, he wanted them to go explore and find a Northwest Passage. So Meriwether Lewis is a big deal in the Jefferson story, and he kept reminding us, well, it's Meriwether Lewis's birthday, in the run-up to the show. So we decided that we would bring him a little birthday cake for Meriwether Lewis and present it to Mr. Jefferson. And we also said, were it your birthday, what should we get you, Mr. Jefferson? And he said, well, a fine wine, and so on and so forth. So early in the show, we presented these gifts to Mr. Jefferson.
Before we take your questions, I just wanted to show you something. You told us on the radio the other day that today is Meriwether Lewis's birthday, is it not?
It is my protege, Meriwether Lewis, of the famous Lewis and Clark expedition.
So we have a birthday cake from Meriwether Lewis. I don't have enough for everybody. You're going to get corn. But
and then one of the greatest explorers who ever lived gets a cupcake.
Meriwether Lewis, and then we said, were it your birthday, what would be an appropriate gift for you?
Right.
And you said, a fine French wine, so we have some...
I said, a case, I think I said. but
I'll make it up to you, because that's not all.
Ooh.
Tickets to Hamilton.
Really?
There's this musical about Hamilton.
No.
People pay a lot of money and wait months for the chance to go see Hamilton.
You are giving me tickets to Hamilton. A man who, from the moment that history stooped to recognize him, represented a tissue of machinations against a country which not only gave him bread and board, but heaped its honors on his head. He was a monarchist. He was a hereditary monarchist. He regarded the people who are in this audience as beneath respect. He said the people, they are a beast, a rabble, entirely incapable of self-government. And now you want me to go sing. Well, these are expensive. Really, Hamilton? I mean, Hamilton, just this much about Hamilton. We had this dream of this agrarian, self-sufficient garden state, a kind of new Garden of Eden almost, in which a highly educated people would mildly govern themselves, be at peace with the rest of the world, work perhaps a little in their fields by day, but at night read Homer in the original Greek. This, where we would have these citizen legislators that would be hesitant and respectful and not ever spend a dollar of the public money unless they absolutely had to. The most enlightened nation that ever lived on the face of the world because of what America offered to us.
Yeah.
Think of that. That was the dream. And I was the articulator of that agrarian Republican dream. And then along comes Colonel Hamilton out of the Caribbean and says, let's be a militaristic system with a strong central government, and we'll have banks and stock exchanges and industry, and we'll fight glorious wars in the world. And he said, the people, they're not up to the challenge of self-government. They must be governed by their betters. So that's your Hamilton.
Yeah. They didn't cover that in the show so much. They some singing and dancing and
part of our conversation last Saturday. Thanks to Pete McMurray for filling in for me while I was on stage doing all of that. Of course, they actually did cover some of that in the show, but the one thing that...
I was going to say...
Okay, fine, but I don't think that Jefferson gets his due in Hamilton. I'm a Jefferson guy.
He's with the best. He's like one of the best characters.
I don't think he is at all.
He had some of the best songs. I loved everything with Jefferson in that show. I completely disagree.
Yeah.
I thought he was one of the best characters.
Well, you can imagine that asking Jefferson about it, he's a little resentful, at least, of all of the praise that Hamilton is getting these days, especially since if all of that money is somehow flowing in the direction of Hamilton and Jefferson dies bankrupt, he's got a chip on his shoulder. A couple of kids asked some terrific questions. One of them was positively delightful. A young lady said, "If everything had gone according to your plan, Mr. Jefferson, what would we be like today?" Let me get to that in a minute. At our Thomas Jefferson show, one more bite and then I'll be done with this, but I hope you're enjoying these because it's just so nice and the crowd so appreciates the wisdom of Thomas Jefferson. So here was one of the very first questions that were asked at our show last Saturday.
So if everything had gone according to what you wanted, according to your plan for when you were making America, how do you think today would be different?
Oh, that's a great question. If you had pursued my vision, how would you be different? Well, you'd all have beautiful gardens. How many of you have a garden? So you're the real Americans, isn't that the way you talk these days? You would ingest a fair amount of food that you produced at the end of your own hands. You would know a number of languages. You would certainly know Latin, because every well-educated person must... I know you know Latin.
Sure. And, I know of Latin, but I don't know Latin.
And you should learn Greek, ancient Greek, so that you can read Homer in the original. It's worth the 4 or 5 years that it will take for you to learn Greek so that you can read Homer and Plutarch. You should know French, of course, because French is the most cosmopolitan language in the world. So you should know some languages. And I said to my daughter, probably Spanish too, yeah, because we're going to have so much intercourse with Spain in the New World. So you should know languages. You should try to play a musical instrument. I played the violin and the cello, and I could piece out a tune on the pianoforte, but you know, we had to make all of our music in my time because we had no recorded music.
You and your wife would do it together, right?
We courted in duets. It would be a very crabby and vigilant citizen, suspicious of power always. You would always be on guard that somebody somewhere is going to misspend your money. But you have to be eternally vigilant if you want to remain free. And you would be the best read people who ever lived on the face of the earth. You know, I cannot live without books. I had three libraries, the largest of which had about 7,000 volumes. That's the America that I wanted, a peace-loving, you know, brilliantly educated, multilingual garden nation that wanted to be at peace. And the rest of the world, this is like something out of Pericles in the funeral oration in Thucydides' Peloponnesian War. The rest of the world would look on this and just ache to be America and say, finally, there is a nation in the history of the world that is fully enlightened, and every other people on earth wants to be just like that.
What would you, the converse of that is then, what would you extricate from society today?
You know, this is a fool's errand. Football.
That ain't going anywhere.
The lottery. A huge military establishment, and a national debt that can never be paid off. Costco.
You get the idea. That's Thomas Jefferson on stage with us. So the next time you hear a show is coming your way, that's a little bit of what you'll get. Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 and obviously 10 a.m. till 12 noon most Saturdays here on WGN Radio, on social media. I'm WGN King John. Our assignment before the news, we didn't get to it, was to come up with nicknames for each other. And I have a couple, but I really haven't finished my work on this.
The thing about a nickname is you can't force it.
Right. Right.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe let it go.
Well, so the one that I've always used for Domati is Dominator.
And it's stuck. I like it.
I was thinking, though, that if I had to do one that, if I was going to force it, if I was going to say, well, who's Domati? What is the name? Blah, 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 blah. I came up with Q-Tip.
That's taken.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's a rapper by the name of Q-Tip. Oh. Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, yeah. I know Tribe Called Quest. So Q-Tip is the guy in that?
So for the record, that's a good one. It means you did good.
Well, but I was thinking you like a quill pen, and it has a fine tip. And you and I have talked about this, so I think Q-Tip works for you because it reminds me of the quill pen that you like to write.
I like it. I like it. Yeah.
I don't think Griff's loving it over there. But
well, no. It's just moot. It is taken, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't know that was the rule. Well, does anybody have Sporty McSport face? Because that's what I have for Joe.
That's pretty good.
That's yeah. That's awesome.
Can you explain the significance you have on that one? The heartfelt thought that went into that one? Like you had your
actually, I have a bunch of words written down in front of me that are, to me, things about Joe Brand. Sports, chill, smooth, play-by-play. So then I came up with... not Playboy, but Play-By. I thought I would call you Play-By.
Play-By.
Hmm.
I mean, it satisfies the Domati two-syllable requirement.
Yes.
And it speaks to the essence of Joe.
It sounds like a bacteria. The Play-By have moved from one part of the cell to the other.
Well, this has spread way more significantly than we thought.
You may never recover. It's the worst case of Play-By I've ever seen. All right, fair enough. And Griff, I can't find one for you in my brain just yet, so wait with bated breath. It's time to play for you part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. We recorded each Thursday here at WGN Radio, and I didn't ask what you guys came up with me. I'm trusting you didn't come up with anything, right?
I got one for you.
All right.
Okay, so you know Childish Gambino. I don't know if you know the story of how he got his name.
No, I don't.
The group Wu-Tang has a website. It's a rap group, and they have names like Ghostface Killer, Inspector Deck, You Got. These are the best nicknames on the planet.
Yeah.
And so they have a website where you put in your name.
Oh, yes, there's a generator.
Yes, and so Childish Gambino put in his name, Donald Glover, and it spit out Childish Gambino, and he actually used it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do this live. I'm on the website. I'm going to put in John Williams here.
Right.
It's loading.
Mm-hmm. But do you have to say things like he's a swell fella?
None of that matters.
It's just going to give me that.
It's just going to spit it out.
Okay.
Because I'm creative.
Yeah.
from this day forward, you will also be known as Fanatical Warlock. This didn't work out as planned.
No, I think it's great.
Fanatical Warlock.
Fanatical Warlock. Almost goes with King John, actually.
Go ahead and introduce me as that, Joe. Say, use my new nickname and let's see if it rolls.
Fanatical Warlock?
Yeah,
what was
that's it? Fanatical.
Fanatical.
I was combining phenomenal and fanatical.
Ooh, I like that. Phenomenal. Ooh, warlock. Awesome. All right, we digress. So thank you, Domati. So it goes like this. We record a podcast called The Mincing Rascals on Thursdays. We post it at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page. Michael Cohen has been a subject of a lot of conversations this week, obviously with Donald Trump and all of that. Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune was talking a little bit about how not only is there a federal case, but there may be a state case against him as well.
This has now become a case in state court in New York, and it's bleeding over into allegations about fraud and deception and all kinds of evil doings with the Trump Foundation. And, you know, it's charity fraud and so on, where Trump was using, charitable money to pay off, to make payments for the things that have nothing to do with
charity. Legal
bills having to do with the flag controversy down at...
create Time magazine covers of
Mar-a-Lago,
himself.
Yeah. and what that means is that this has gone beyond the federal jurisdiction, which means that Trump's ability to stop this through pardons and so on and pulling the levers on the federal process is diminishing also. And I think that, you know, that's a big deal that Cohen was subpoenaed, I think, in state court this week. I think you're going to see this is a much harder trap for Trump to get out of, no matter what he does. And I think he's in a situation right now, if he gets a pardon to Manafort, and Manafort was convicted on 8 counts, and the jury hung on 10, right?
The reporting today by a lone juror.
But by a lone juror, this reminds me of the Blagojevich 1 trial. If you remember, the first Blagojevich trial resulted, I think, in one conviction for lying to the FBI, and of, like, what, 17 hung counts?
Right.
And it turned out that it was one loopy juror who just didn't believe what she had been told and was just I think dug in that she wasn't going to vote to convict. And then they retried him, and they convicted on the others. If this had been a seriously hung jury, if it had been like half and half, or if maybe most of the people or nearly all the people had wanted to acquit and there was one holdout, then you could justify what Trump said about how, well, gee, this is, you know, only eight counts.
Well, why wasn't this jury sequestered? I don't understand that. When you've got, you know, Russian ne'er-do-wells sort of at the heart of some of this, you know, that they could try to pressure and do things. You had the president going on national TV and defending the defendant, which is never done.
Even in sort of routine criminal cases in Cook County, when the jury is deliberating, now they're not. It's very rare to sequester
during
a jury
for the entire trial.
Yeah. Remember, the O.J. Simpson jury was a sequester for the entire trial. But usually during deliberations, jurors are sequestered. It didn't happen here. I don't know why. But
One other thing, you know, the president was on Fox this morning, and he's talking about now how flipping should be maybe illegal.
Campaign violations are considered not a big deal, frankly. But if somebody defrauded a bank and he's going to get 10 years in jail or 20 years in jail, but if you can say something bad about Donald Trump and you'll go down to 2 years or 3 years, which is the deal he made, in all fairness to him, most people are going to do that. And I've seen it many times. I've had many friends involved in this stuff. It's called flipping, and it almost ought to be illegal.
I'm sorry, don't laugh, John. It's the president saying this, that he says it should almost be maybe illegal. But in doing that, he talked about how Michael Cohen copped a plea to get a lesser deal. He didn't cop a, he didn't, there's no plea deal. He went in here and pleaded naked without any sort of agreement from prosecutors. There's no guidance on what his prison term might be.
But you might imagine that was his motivation.
Well, in his defense, there is a problem in with jailhouse snitches and other informants and witnesses being offered really what amounts to substantial rewards for telling the stories the prosecutors want to hear. It is a problem in the legal system where, you know, it's Larry. I mean, it's not just as easy as saying, well, that's a crazy thing to say. It's not a crazy thing to say. It's not a crazy concern to have. It's someone would make up a story about another defendant or a co-defendant in order to get a lesser sentence. That's not a crazy worry. On the other hand, it is how you get true testimony out of people. And the truth does come out when you're saying, look, if you don't tell us the truth, then your co-defendant's going to tell us the truth, and one of you's going away for a long time. And then hopefully when they do start telling the stories, then the stories match up with other known facts.
And it matches up with other known facts. I mean, it's not like Michael Cohen is the only source of information on this. They had 4 million documents on his computer.
Could be that they've got everything they need without Cohen's testimony, and that's why they're not offering him a deal.
Another thing that makes me optimistic is that like at 1 a.m. yesterday, Trump, in all capital letters, tweets, "No collusion, rigged witch hunt!" Exclamation mark, and that's it.
That's like screaming out in the night, but on Twitter.
He opens up his window.
Go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore."
I mean, it is like demented in a way. He's so,
well,
there's
this
flop
demented
sweat all over that tweet.
Stop and think about that, because it is almost demented in the middle of the night, regardless of the time, unprovoked, unpart of any other sort of string of comments, right? Just to blurt that out without provocation. It's bizarre. I mean, we forget how bizarre everything this man does is.
I laughed out loud at Trump's tweet, and I've never done that before. He's a man devoid of a sense of humor. And I don't know if he meant to be funny when he said, "If anybody's looking for an attorney, I do not recommend Michael Cohen." Exclamation point. I don't know if he thought that kicking sand in Michael Cohen's face with that was really going to sting.
As many people have said, he is not behaving the way an innocent person would behave.
Well,
and so I mean, you draw these conclusions, and I think that this, first of all, I really believe at this point that the Democrats are going to take the House and that there will be never-ending investigations of the president in the next 2 years in the House. There'll be hearings all day, every day about what's going on there. And I think it's going to drag him down, and I believe there's material there to impeach him.
So do the Democrats run on impeachment?
Boy, they say they aren't. They say they're not going to. They say that is not how to win the middle. I mean, I thought the strategy would be flip the House, impeach the president. At least you'd get the articles. Maybe the Senate doesn't convict. I'll bet they wouldn't. Certainly the current
Senate. At this point, they wouldn't.
What do you need, 67 votes? They don't get 67 votes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're going to be able to impeach him at this point. I mean, they can impeach him, but they can't remove him from office. And I'm not sure, what the long-term gain of tying him up in impeachment proceedings
would be. Oh, I do. Are you kidding me? Bill Clinton was impeached. That will always hang on him, and there's plenty of people that will always enjoy that fact. I think there's plenty of people who, knowing full well you wouldn't convict, would be happy to see the House drop articles of impeachment.
Yeah, but I think all the scummy around this administration right now is what you run on, and you run on the, you know, Duncan Hunter. Is it Duncan Hunter?
Yeah.
In California, who's blaming the Democratic Justice Department, which is ridiculous. You know, so you run on all of that stuff with the implication, right, that there may well be impeachment down the road. But if you run on impeachment, elect us so we can impeach him, that seems petty. Well, I think, especially when you're saying we should wait for the Mueller investigation to finish.
It's implicit in any Democrats' campaign right now for the House, which is that you're going to be a check on the president at the very least. I mean, that you have to make sure that you're building some guardrails. And I can't believe that there's a majority of Americans who don't feel that this president needs those guardrails. That if you're weighing a vote, say, out in the 6th Congressional District between Roskam and Kasten, this sort of somewhat moderate Republican, somewhat moderate Democrat, and you're thinking, okay, do I want to make sure that someone is in the House? I want to put someone in the House who's going to be a check on this president, this impulsive, narcissistic, arrogant, rash, dangerous president. Do I want someone to be a guardrail on him? I think the answer is yes for a substantial percentage of voters.
You guys haven't seen all of the videos I have. It's hard to keep up this week. One's 14 seconds long. One's 70 seconds long. He's standing in front of the White House. He's got that enormous suit on, the red tie. His hands are at his side, you know, barking out something that felt like, okay, good positive statement for me. Okay, let's do another one. Okay, let's do another one. One is that the Democrats are for ISIS, but I'm for ICE.
What I want to do is abolish the killers in ISIS. And you know who's going to win? We are.
14 seconds long. Boom. Okay, good. He just puts that on his page. Then he did the one about Molly Tibbetts and how this illegal alien took her forever from her family. And at the end of politicizing that horrible killing. Right.
We also need the funding for this year's building of the wall. So, to the family of Molly Tibbetts, all I can say is God bless you. God bless you.
You know what her family is saying to him is shut up.
Yeah.
They are really angry about him.
Her parents haven't, but her cousin and aunt and some of them.
Well, but even the parents' initial statement, right? We know violence comes in all colors or something like that.
Part of the Mincing Rascals podcast featuring this week Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand. Eric Zorn, of course, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, our own Steve Bertrand and me. The Mincing Rascals, judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago, is always posted at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. And then the gang talked about some local things, including the governor's race and about the Wilmette mom who was investigated for letting her 8-year-old walk the dog around the block. Unaccompanied by an adult, an 8-year-old took the dog for a walk around the block. A neighbor reported it to the police. The police looked into it, and then DCFS did a child neglect investigation into the parent that was doing that. Can you imagine? So we were talking about movies off the air. Griffin saw, just chime in here for one quick sec, Griff. You saw what movie? You saw Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
1 to 100. What do you give Crazy Rich Asians?
Well, I would like to save this for the Vibes course.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, then we'll do that.
Ooh, a tease.
What did you just see?
I saw 2001, A Space Odyssey in IMAX.
Which is, what, the 50-year anniversary?
50 years. And it still makes sense. I thought it's going to be a movie about the past version of the future that's going to be kind of wrong. I mean, I've seen the movie many times. It is my favorite movie. I didn't know if it would still be relevant, but there's that last act, right? Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite. And my friend and I were talking about it. We thought that totally worked because the character is seeing himself at different stages of development in life. And so in the same way, we're looking back at how the past looked at the future. So Kubrick designed this movie to make that it still makes sense now. It still resonates.
Well,
now,
and the electronics that they're on in those spaceships look very,
really cool.
Very modern.
Oh, yeah.
They're like on iPads. And this was 50 years ago.
Yeah, and those were all film projection, rear projections.
Right.
I know a lot about this movie.
It was better depiction of the future in the small screens, not in space travel. We moved away from that, but we're all on our phones now. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had the same worry, too, when I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey. We saw it at Music Box, and it was some special... I don't remember what was special about it.
70mm, maybe.
It was 70mm, yeah. And it was cool to see it on a big screen instead of on your TV, which is how a lot of people might go back and watch it now. And I had the same feeling that it holds up, that it still
really
feels cool, especially the last part. Although, you're different than me in that you seem to understand what that movie is all about, and I don't know that I do.
Well, I have read the books, which explain that.
Yeah.
So, I kind of wish I hadn't, though. Because it's such an open thing, I wish I hadn't had it explained.
Okay,
so
but the obelisk on the moon, the handball court, you know, the big black thing making the noise, what is that?
They call it the monolith.
Yeah, what is that?
The idea is that it's this thing. In the books, it's very literal. The monolith teaches people, or apes, or whatever, to do stuff, like, you know.
So is it God, though, or is it knowledge?
John. Is it God? What is it, John? it's a visual... It's a koan. You know what that word is?
No.
It's a Zen thing. It's a question, an unanswerable question, or a.
Maybe I'll just watch Crazy Rich Asians instead.
Well, that I've yet to see, but I want to see.
Yeah. All right, you're gonna do the news for us in about a half an hour.
At noon,
Don Matisse right around the corner. He's got that coming up.
White Ivor song. When I started balling, I was young. You gon' think about me when I'm gone. I need that money like the ring I never.
Thank you, Domiti Pongo. John Williams here. This is WGN. Saturdays at this time, producer Griff introduces us to a song. We score it on a scale of 1 to 100. We learn a little bit about the popular music scene through Griff. Well, I think this sounds really good, Griff. Okay, so clue us in here. What are we listening to?
That's Post Malone, a very famous rapper singer. That's an old song, though. That's from a few years ago, called White Iverson. And that's how he describes himself, as the white... I guess that was...
There's my nickname.
No. that's another one that's taken also, unfortunately. But yeah, that was kind of his breakthrough hit. And he's just been on my mind because the VMAs were last weekend. I didn't watch most of it. But he just kind of popped back up in the popular imagination for me. I kind of don't think about him that much. And then realized I hadn't played a song of his here. And thought that was an oversight. Because he's extremely successful. He's a huge deal.
Is that what his music generally sounds like?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then I'm going to start listening to that.
I think you might. I mean, if you see a picture of him, you will want not to like him, I think. I don't know. Domiti, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, his tattoos look like at the end of a classroom day when the kids scribble on a board. Yes. They're in weird places, stick figures.
And he's just his facial hair situation is so unfortunate. sometimes you'll see a picture of him on Twitter and someone will comment, like, I can smell this picture. Like, he just looks so gross.
But that song was excellent.
That's awesome.
I give that a 95.
I'm giving that a 92.
Against my better judgment, but that is kind of an undeniable song. I have to agree.
Joe Brand.
Yeah, I'll go with a 90.
Bring it home, baby.
I do like the song. I kind of agree with you guys just with the whole Post Malone's presence. He's the one guy I have more confidence in than my facial hair.
By the way, the only thing I thought people were talking about after the VMAs this year was Madonna's speech and the tribute, or was it, to Aretha Franklin. I've since read that that was not supposed to be a tribute to Aretha Franklin per se. But whatever she was doing on stage, it was very Madonna. She got on stage and, in essentially addressing Aretha Franklin's greatness, told stories about herself for about 9 minutes, and then Twitter blew up on her.
Yeah, no, it was tough. I can't watch that show, but
the VMAs?
I'll catch clips here and there. Yeah. I mean, he didn't even win anything. I don't even really want to go there. But
who?
Post Malone.
Oh, yeah, right.
But he was there. He's a big part of the scene that MTV is pushing now, so he was on my mind.
Let me throw the next one out there then for y'all. Big Bang Theory, 12 seasons. CBS announced this week that they're not going to renew it. They'll have another 23 episodes this year, but then there will be no Big Bang Theory. 1 to 100, Big Bang Theory. Doma T, go.
Never seen it, but 12 seasons is plenty. So I give that 100. Cancel it.
Oh, I see. That's what you're doing. Okay, so we're saying 100 is cancel it and 0 is keep it. Then I'm about a 60 because I've never understood the appeal of this show.
Thank you.
It's if it's funny for you, it's funny and I'm happy for you. I can't watch it. And I know that's something must be wrong with me because America loves this show. I don't get it. Never have.
I've given it a chance. I've sat down and I've tried to watch an episode, and I get it. The guys are all smart, and the girl's kind of dumb. Okay. Like, just every joke is basically a joke within itself about how they say some crazy long-term word that no one understands, and that's supposed to be hysterical. I like all the actors. I like basically everyone in the show, but I've never been able to just really enjoy that show.
I'll give it 1 point for every season that it's gotten. 12.
So a 12
that's
for that
12
show.
12 for me,
huh?
Yeah.
Hey, Domati, what do you want us to talk about?
Willie Wilson. So
my man.
We've been talking about my man Willie for a long time. Okay, so the Illinois State Board of Elections has cleared him, said nothing was wrong with him passing out $200,000. He didn't violate any campaign laws. 0 is great decision. 100 is boo. They should have found him guilty of something.
I don't know what to do about this. I've said, and I'll still say, if Willie Wilson were a serious candidate for mayor, him handing out $200,000 for votes would be frowned upon. But he's not going to win mayor, and it's a rich guy giving money to people who ain't rich, helping to pay their property taxes. How can you be against that? So I'm glad that he's not being punished for it. So I think that makes me a 0, right?
Yes.
I'm happy with the decision. Where are you, Griff?
I don't know. I don't know the case well enough, but it does seem like a real predicament. But yeah, I would lean towards your side, I think. Yeah. I'm maybe a 30.
All right, Domati, you go.
Or Joe.
Joe.
I'll go as Q-tip now.
Oh.
Yeah, no, the whole thing, I'm kind of with Griff. I was a little bit behind it all. I was taking a listen to a few of Domati's newscasts, and I mean, how did he do this? He just wrote checks to everybody that needed some help with their property
tax? You signed up online or you just showed up in person. He'd give you cash, but it would be people on the south side. And they said, look, all the money you're giving to, you're running for mayor for the whole city of Chicago, they're all African-American. They're from the south side, right? And so he was sitting in our studio shortly after that, and he said, well, I'll give some money to some white people. Meet me at the county treasurer's office. And so the following Wednesday, they went downtown, and he was handing out money to white people, too, and a lot of blacks and Hispanics as well. But he just said, if you're poor and you need some money, property taxes are too high, I'll give you $500. And he handed out a couple $100,000.
Yeah, and he does it every year.
Yeah, yeah.
Does he really?
And so then Bruce Rauner's like, I could use some of those votes. Here's $100,000. Give away some of my money, too. And then they told Bruce Rauner, you know, he's just handing it out to people, and it looks like he's giving away votes. And Rauner goes, this is an outrage. So Rauner was trying to have it both ways, I thought. Anyway, the idea of somebody just giving money out of their pocket to help people in this screwed-up tax town, I say more power to you.
Yeah, there's no way you can argue the generosity of that whole thing, but, I mean, then does it just come down to the point of are we buying votes?
Yeah, we are. We are. Yeah. Well, he's not going to win. Okay, so let's see. Joe, what do you want us to look at?
Yeah, I really like the Serena Williams topic you brought up. I mean, I was looking into it, and I was hoping we'd talk about it. This whole cat suit that she it looks like she wore for a number of reasons, apparently to kind of inspire all the future mothers or recent mothers and just the power that comes with giving birth. But then also it looks like, you know, it was used for helping out her blood clots after the whole pregnancy. I just don't understand how tennis can just flat out ban this. I don't get it. It looks like a uniform. I mean, it's Under Armour. It's sleek. It's covering. I mean, it's less revealing than the skirts that tennis players typically wear. So I don't understand where it comes into. The
French Open said they won't allow it anymore.
Right. And all they said is, what did they say? It will no longer be accepted. One must respect the game and its place.
Yeah. It's so outrageous.
It's so wrong. I don't know what the French are. And the French, you know, I don't see them as all uptight about the human shape and form. They'd
but
be happy if you were nude.
I don't even think that's what it is, though. I don't know. It's like Joe said. It's not... I would be against this reason for banning it anyway, but it's not any more revealing than... It's not even that.
In fact, Serena has worn more revealing things.
Okay, but it's not revealing, you guys. It's from her ankle to her wrist. Everything is covered in skin tight black, and it's very shape showing, is what it is.
But you look at those pictures. I did not get that.
She's trying to be sexy.
She looks like she's working out. She looks like she's going to work as an athlete.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like athletic wear.
Okay, I get it. Listen, if you're asking me what do I make of the decision by the French, I give it a zero. It's just wrong. And Serena's going to be the victor for this. Nike just posted on Twitter, you may take away her superhero outfit, but never her superhero powers. Good tweet, right?
I'm buying some Nikes today.
You're so easy.
Oh, my God.
But you know what? But I'll just say this, in contrast to all of that, Wimbledon, all white, I love it. I wish that there's something I think is cool, and I don't know what Wimbledon's dress code is like, but if they said everybody has to wear, you know, ridiculous white shorts and a shirt with a collar on the tennis court, as long as everybody's treated the same, I guess I'm okay with that. But this just calling out Serena for being inappropriately dressed is stupid. Stupid.
Yep.
So that's Joe's. I did Big Bang Theory. Griff did the music. So I guess we're about done, right?
I was just going to say I saw Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, yeah. So just tell us about that, Griff.
It was really good. I had a great time.
What is it about? I haven't heard anything about what it's about.
It's about Crazy Rich Asians.
See, that's the thing. Lou Manfredini was saying this morning, he just saw it and he had to explain what Crazy Rich Asians was about. For one thing, he thought that the title was a little provocative.
I'm being facetious, but it was about, or not facetious, whatever. It's about a woman who's an economics professor at NYU.
Yeah.
Travels to meet her boyfriend's family in Singapore. She's Asian American, but she's never actually been to Asia. So it's a first time trip. And it's about, you know, a wedding they're attending, and he's thinking of proposing, and it's kind of a romantic comedy, but it's also about family and heritage and all these things. It's really fun.
I'm interested in your thoughts here, Griff. I don't want to take us too far on a tangent, but in the Black Twitter sphere, there's a character that people online are saying appropriates African American culture and has these stereotypes attached to her. Is it a funny character or offensive character in your view?
Yeah, it's the character played by Awkwafina, who I think is
Awkwafina.
she was in Ocean's 8 earlier this year, and she's like kind of a YouTube star at first. I'd be much more interested in your thoughts on it if you haven't seen it yet.
But
if you do see
me and Griff tend to be
Don't
on the
be a
same
coward,
wavelength.
Griff, ask the question.
She's very funny in the movie, and I loved her performance. And there were moments where I
got a little cringy.
I might have cringed a little bit. But she's always kind of working in that register. But then there's a couple moments where it teeters over and seems like, okay. But I felt a little uncomfortable.
Can you watch this movie kind of colorblind in that, okay, I get it, it's great that a movie is made by Asians, stars Asians, and talks about the Asian culture?
The first in 25 years with a major studio movie in America with an Asian American
Do you
cast.
Have the clip from Roger Ebert loaded, Griff? Do you have that handy? We didn't download it.
I think we can play it when we come back from the break.
So listen to this. There's a connection with this movie, if you can imagine, to the late, great Roger Ebert. Griff will explain after this. All right, Griff, so you had a piece of audio you played for me before we walked into the studio.
Yeah.
What is this all about?
So the reason Crazy Rich Asians is kind of a historic moment is because it's been 25 years, as I talked about, since the last American studio movie with an all-Asian and Asian-American cast. The last one was The Joy Luck Club in 1993. There's another movie, but not a major studio release, called Better Luck Tomorrow. It's one of the first movies directed by Justin Lin, and this had also a mostly Asian cast, but it wasn't a major studio release. He's now one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. I think he's made a bunch of Fast and Furious movies, and he produces everything, and he's huge. But this was when he was just getting started, and that movie premiered at Sundance, and this video has been circulating online from a DVD extra from Better Luck Tomorrow, where they showed a clip of that Sundance screening, and Roger Ebert comes into the fold. Can I play it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the third screening at the library, this guy gets up. He praises us about the filmmaking and the performances, and then...
Why would you put the talent up there and yourself make a film that's so empty and moral for Asian Americans?
think a lot of times in films, there's not enough discourse, you know? And I think this was made for that. And it felt good to actually get that in return.
This guy feels like he has the right to tell us how we are supposed to exist in media. And then Roger Ebert gets up.
What I find very offensive and condescending about your statement is nobody would say to a bunch of white filmmakers, how could you do this to your people? Yeah. Yes, film has the right to be about these people, and Asian American characters have the right to be whoever the hell they want to be. They do not have to represent their people.
It's a historical.
That's God bless Roger Ebert.
How about that? So it might have been hard to understand what happened at the first, but after the screening of the movie, a guy stands up and says, look, you guys made a good movie. He said, you make a good movie here, but why are you casting Asians in such a negative light? And then the people behind the movie, as I understand it, Griff, are going, you know, Asians can be like anybody else. We can be good. We can be bad. We don't have to conform to your hope or stereotype for us.
Yeah, but they don't show any of the footage of them responding to that question, so I don't know what they said, but you can tell the power that Roger Ebert had in that room, and he was wielding it for good. It's so beautiful.
So Ebert just stands up and he starts yelling at the guy that was criticizing the filmmakers,
yeah,
and saying, you know, you wouldn't tell whites how to act in a white movie. You can't do that to Asians in an Asian movie.
It's beautiful.
We're cheering Roger.
It's beautiful. So then the director of Crazy Rich Asians just a couple days ago tweeted this link to this video out and said, I was at that screening. He was in the audience there on that night.
You're wow. kidding.
No.
So how old is he in that?
John Chu. He said he was in college. I should have had the tweet pulled up to
funny.
Read it. But
so
he was in college.
He's just a college kid.
And he wanted to work in film. He was at Sundance. And he was at that screening when Roger Ebert did that.
Boy, don't you love the synergy of that? How these things just kind of come together?
It's amazing. He's now like a huge power player in Hollywood. Justin Lin is he's one of the biggest people in Hollywood, period. And they're both in this room with Roger Ebert. It's beautiful.
I'm getting chills right now.
Yeah, that's
it makes
cool.
me tear up. It really does. It's so great.
Well, it's just a nice little destiny for him. I was there. I saw Roger Ebert stand up for a film in a way that he felt it should be stood up for, and then you go on to make great movies yourself. It's 11:56. Speaking of super powerful people, Amy Guth strolls into the studio. Let's see what's coming up on her show next. Amy, sell your sizzle. What's good about your show today?
Well, as ever, we have a big show with lots of things to discuss with business headlines around us. So today we're going to be talking about nonprofits because August 17th was National Nonprofit Day. So lots to discuss there, in particular kind of the inner workings of some of them and some misconceptions around them. Then we'll talk a little bit about some rural manufacturing and a really interesting case that's been in the news about a case of employee medical leave that kind of ran amok. So we're going to take a look at that and how that was resolved with that company. And then we're going to talk to Michael Hawthorne from the Tribune about the state of the coal industry in Illinois and how that's looking on a federal level and how that impacts us here.
Michael's always a good conversation.
Yeah,
too.
He always is. We had him on just not that long ago, but he writes so many interesting things. It's always a joy to catch up with him and all the things he does.
Have a good show.